If the Netflix series The Haunting of Hill House isn't currently scaring the heck out of you, it may well be scaring the heck out of someone you know. Loosely based on the 1959 Shirley Jackson novel, it tells what is, in many ways, an old-fashioned ghost story.
Shuttling between the past and the present, the series traces the effects of trauma on a family that once, unwisely, chose to spend a summer living in a house that is up to no good. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes. Today we're talking about Netflix's The Haunting of Hill House. With me and Glenn in the studio is Barry Hardiman from NPR's Weekend Edition. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
We are always so happy to have you with us. And you had actually come to my desk and said, Linda, I want to talk about The Haunting of Hill House. And this was before I had even seen it.
Ooh.
So now we have brought this into being.
Now we're doing it.
I know. And I'm going to get to you. I'm going to go over to Glenn first. What did you think of The Haunting of Hill House?
Well, as has been established, horror isn't my thing. But if I'm going to do horror, this is my jam.
Yeah.
Give me a dark, spooky mansion so that even when I'm bored, I can still be in that dark, spooky mansion space and then flash on things that I love, like Clue, like Rebecca, like The Castle of Otranto, like The Seventh Guest, like Murder at the House on the Hill, like The House with a Clock in its Walls, book, not movie. And not for nothing, also, in this particular series, get my HGTV on, like thinking what's going to happen when they knock through that wall. Give me a severe, taciturn housekeeper. Give me characters that I can care about enough so that I don't want them to be fed to a figurative or literal meat grinder.
Yeah.
Give me a ghost story that is about the way violence can leave a kind of a hole in the world that can't be healed by time or by grief. Because gore, to me, is very boring. Jump scares, which, to be fair, this has plenty of. I always resent them because it's like, oh, congratulations, you triggered an autonomic response. You must be very proud. Why don't you shine a flashlight in my face next? Because that requires as much skill.
Or it's like a dog when you blow in its eyes.
Exactly. give me scares that tap into...
Wait, what happens when you blow in a dog's eyes?
They, like, flinch.
They
flinch.
Okay,
they flinch.
Sorry.
Because they're, you know...
I thought something else happened that I didn't know about. I just want to know about. Sorry.
So this is the kind of scares I like. Footsteps in the hallway, doorknobs turning, hiding under the bed while something's looking for you. The whole idea of basements. That dumbwaiter scene, oh boy. Give me the kind of production design and technical skill that this brings. We'll talk about those long tracking shots in episode 6, which if they're just there to be showy and directory, they're pointless. But what that whole episode is doing, because it's the first time we see all the characters together, is trying to connect them to their past, to each other. So there's a reason it's there, and it's actually really done pretty well. So I went into this thing with my eyes wide open, literally, full light of day, at my work desk, with sun glaring in on the screen, and just having researched every episode beforehand, having gone to Wikipedia, having read the reams of Vulture articles. Vulture was all over this thing about here are all the hidden ghosts that you may have missed.
That one's really worth checking out.
Absolutely. But if I have a beef with the show, it's that, because that's not fair. That is dirty pool, because they know that when something scary is about to happen or is happening, I'm looking at the far left bottom corner of the screen.
That's what I do.
And if there's a face staring back at me, that's not cool. Don't
Where my J.Crew shopping cart is. Because that's just something to give me like a feeling of like, there's leopard in a cart, guys. The world's going to be okay.
All that said, because I've been talking enough, I will say that I enjoyed the journey a lot more than the destination. That that last episode was kind of a lot of disappointing.
Word.
All right, so those are Glenn thoughts. Now I need some Barry thoughts, as I always do. You have read the novel.
I am a huge Shirley Jackson fan. Huge. And she is someone that I have admired for a long time. And I, too, am not a horror person. And thought, I got to do this for Shirley, and found myself in the same sort of situation where it's like, I don't do horror, but if it's an allegory about motherhood and my own guilt, then I'm in, you know? And I also think it's really an interesting, I love that the director said, okay, I'm going to turn this into a real family, because in the book, they are not actually connected. There's a lot of homages to the names in the book, but it's not a real family. So I thought that was brilliantly conceived of. And again, I think it is a lovely and heartbreaking meditation for me on how we all try to keep our children safe and how we can't.
It's interesting that both of you said, and I have sometimes said this of myself too, like, oh, no, I'm not that much of a horror person. But I think, and then you get people who listen to the show and say, well, why would you do a thing when none of you like, and that's not really, I don't think that's really what
good
we
point,
mean. It means I don't like what people are often talking about when they say mm-hmm. horror, which is gore. And
mm-hmm.
which,
I can't do the
but
purge.
But that's not all of horror mm-hmm. at all. And Barry, when you say you're a huge Shirley Jackson fan,
I love
you
horror.
You do horror.
Yeah,
right?
I know the lottery is it for
I
me.
I say
yeah.
that about myself, despite the fact that Stephen King was one of the most influential writers on me when I was growing up, because yep. I loved reading Stephen King. And mm-hmm. that's a lot of that is horror.
Yeah.
And, you know, Glenn has kinds of horror that he really likes. Uh-huh. This is the kind of horror that I like a lot more
yes.
than some of what people are talking about yes. when they say horror, which is something different.
I just find it physically uncomfortable to right. watch horror because I just, the adrenaline response is not pleasurable the way it is, I think, for
exactly.
some people that are like, give me all the jump scares.
Exactly.
Like, Theo and Shirley in the car, like, I'm going to do that once,
right,
people. I'm going to do it once.
Yeah. And I think.
And I spoiled that for you people on purpose so that you know it's coming because otherwise you are going to pee a little bit.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this quite a lot, particularly mm-hmm. by the end. Not the ending, mm-mm. but
yeah,
by the middle.
Is a real travesty.
The middle late part, I think, is very good in a
beautiful.
Bunch of ways. Mm-hmm. Where I felt like it struggled, and there, what we haven't talked about yet is there are 5 kids in this family. Mm-hmm. That might be too many.
Mm-hmm. Especially with Steve.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like when the show is at its least effective is when it tries to be too neat by going through each kid and mm-hmm. do each kid has each reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Each kid has this thing happen. Really, the first 5 episodes are sort of one episode per kid mm-hmm. as you kind of find out their story. That's more Steve than I wanted, especially for the first episode.
Yeah.
Starting off with a whole hour about Steve made me think this show was going to be less interesting than it ultimately was.
Right.
I might have been able to condense those 5 episodes
yes.
totally.
A bit. And that's
totally.
A very common Netflix problem is for them to make 10 episodes when they could make 8.
That Steve's problem is, oh, I'm dealing with my family and my writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh my God, I dated that guy. Like, you don't need a ghost to know when to leave the house.
There's a thing late in the piece, and it's toward that finale mm-hmm. where you get a kind of an each kid has to go through a little similar dream experience. And it's like, and he's still the least interesting.
He's still
but you're
boring.
Like,
yep.
And I even felt like Shirley, who's played by Elizabeth Reaser, mm-hmm. is also not my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
I responded to almost everyone else in the story more than to those two. And those are the two who anchor mm-hmm. the first 2 episodes.
Right. No, that's an unfortunate entry yeah. into the thing because it does slow it down considerably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's and true. I think the back half of this season where we're starting to get answers is, and this is not just because it's Netflix bloat and it's 10 episodes when it should be 6 or 8, but inevitably, in a mystery of any kind, the answers are less interesting than the questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I remember watching a scene toward the end where 2 ghosts are talking to each other. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, that's not, you've gone from horror, where there's a human involved and the fear of the unknown, into fantasy. And that's
mm-hmm.
fine if you want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But understand that, like, this whole thing is predicated on our fear of the unknown. And
mm-hmm.
as soon as you do that, where it's like you're watching, like,
ghost tea party.
It's like you're watching, like, 2 busboys at a restaurant, you
yeah.
know, and you're the only one in the restaurant, and they're
right.
just moaning about their job. It's like, well, wait a minute. This
yeah.
isn't, this doesn't have that same.
No, we broke the contract. Yeah.
Which is why I think the climax of the series feels so much smaller than everything that's gone before. It feels
mm-hmm.
like a good but unexceptionable episode of Buffy or a Monster of the Week
Ooh.
Episode of X-Files where you got, here's the big bad, here's how we deal with it, let's move on.
And what? Also a real, and I know you've read the book, yeah?
A long time ago.
Okay. I gasped, felt so betrayed by what they have done to Shirley Jackson's understanding of this book, which is this one line, and I don't know that I can say what they
yeah.
do to it, but the thing that anyone,
it's the most famous line,
the most
the
famous
book.
Line in the book, which yeah. is whatever walks there walks alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know
yeah.
already
yeah.
I must say, like, Shirley Jackson's novel Haunting of Hill House was nominated for the National Book Award at the same time as Roth and Bellow and all these, so she's already been completely ignored by all these irritating men, so finally she gets her due, and we're going to talk about the hidden genius of this woman who is also this, you know, sort of famous feminist housewife, all of these things. And we took the point of it.
Yeah.
And we thought, you know what? Maybe she could use an edit.
Yeah.
F that.
Well, not only did I find the final episode unexceptional, but it is also very explainy. It's very
oh, yeah.
like, everything that up until then has kind of been, you are intuiting what is going on with these people and how the trauma of what happened mm-hmm. in the past segment of the story has affected them throughout their lives. All of a sudden, now you have them kind of explaining how it has. Well, you see, I never felt this way because I mm-hmm. felt that way, and I should have blah, blah, blah. And everything is made into text, which to me in
it's
horror
like back-end exposition
is particularly strange. Yeah, back-end exposition, sort of. It takes away from the power of some of the performances, particularly I feel like Carla Gugino, who plays the mother of the family, really has a feel for this woman's mm-hmm. slippage into kind of uncertainty about fantasy and reality mm-hmm. and what's a dream and the pain that she's feeling about her kids and about mm-hmm. her fear for them and her knowledge that something in her is not right.
But knowing that she still has to protect them and that mental illness doesn't preclude her love for them mm-hmm. and wanting to protect. She is so good and so criminally, I feel like, undercast in things. I just mm-hmm. want to see her all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
But the acting is not uniformly great.
Nope.
And in episodes like episode 6, where it's long takes, mm-hmm. those differences in mm-hmm. skill set
yep.
kind of get exacerbated. Mm-hmm. They're leaning on certain actors over and above their skill set.
There's also a significant chunk of this story that has to be carried in part by kid actors, some of whom I think are a little bit more interesting than others, some of whom are more cute than good, and other ones of whom are really, I really like the little kid who plays Luke, the little with the glasses.
He seemed real.
Just a really intense, kind of odd delivery in a real kid way.
Kids are weird.
In a way that I really like.
Yeah, I agree.
So, Barry, do you think that the shifting of this from the book to the show, where they do make it a family, do you think that's kind of contributing to the fact that they have to, or they feel they have to, undercut that one sentence? Because if you're going to talk about it in terms of family, you are changing something central about the book.
Right. We are conditioned in American television to think that family things have to tell a certain message about family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they were sort of magnetized to that message. But what is sort of interesting about it, like for me, you know, I watched this through the lens of last weekend, right? When I was at work covering a terrible, horrible shooting in Pittsburgh. I would have been happier, I think, to see my own unease reflected in these characters. I think it would have made me feel less guilt about what I can and cannot protect my children from. And in general, in prestige television, they like to sit with that kind of unease. But in making this into also the family drama, I think they leaned a little bit too hard toward the This Is Us parenthood lens of that, mm-hmm. whereas it would have been really helpful, I think, to say this is the world. You cannot protect your children, but you can always love them.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that they also lean too hard into a rigid infrastructure? Have you guys heard about these stages of grief theory?
Yes, I have. Each of the kids represents one of the stages of grief. And
and their birth order dictates that. So Stephen is denial, Shirley is anger, Theodore is bargaining, Lucas is depression, and Nell is acceptance, which is twisted.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. I hope that's not true, because it just shuts everything down. This is what allegory does. It's a key and a lock, as it were. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel that there's some truth to it, because where we are getting like, it's his turn.
That's what I mean when I say where I think it struggles is where it sticks too rigidly to that kind of, for each of the five kids, we will have an X, or ultimately each of the four who are involved in one of the phases of the ending. One thing that I do want to mention, when you are talking about something like this after it has been out for a couple of weeks, I think one thing that happens is you tend to sort of skip over the things that have already been talked about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, I think the show is really good in a bunch of ways.
It's beautiful.
The imagery of the house, mm-hmm. I think, is exceptionally well done. It's not a totally new idea, but they have a feel for executing those, you know, woman in a long dress in a dark house, those kinds of classic horror images. Mm-hmm. And I think those are beautifully done. As I said, I think the Carla Gugino performance, I just think, is so good and delicate and smart. I think that the direction is very clever. There is some beautiful work that's done, as Glenn was saying, with very long mm-hmm. shots. There are a couple of kind of glints of humor, but not very many, that I think are extremely well done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, because by the time you get to this point, it's like, so this thing has gotten very good reviews, Let's yes. take that as a given.
Yeah.
Here are kind of the caveats to that. Mm-hmm. But I do want to say, despite having a lot of doubts about it going in, there are parts of it that I found incredibly moving.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly moving.
Oh, I was absolutely bawling. I mean, I really was like weeping through a lot of this. And I will say, I'm picking on something that I really, really, really liked and on something that I think was so creative. If we're going to get psychological horror that are about like trauma and history and mm-hmm. parenthood, like bring it on. Yeah. I want more and more and more of that.
Yeah. Some of these images of scary things mm-hmm. are going to stay with me in a way that the really scary things that you see in your life do.
Mm-hmm.
And then every once in a while you think about them and you just go,
yep.
mm-hmm. and that's good.
When you're alone at a cabin, say, for
yeah.
example.
Oh,
maybe that would happen.
Yep.
Glenn, what if I were talking at you in your cabin and all of a sudden my mouth.
can I say, by the way, that I still will, if you are a person that is into horror, if you have not actually read this book,
mm-hmm.
it is so good. And it is so scary. This and Rosemary's Baby are the two books that I read that I thought I had to get the books out of the house because they felt so mm-hmm. terrifying to me as objects.
Yeah.
So if you like that,
yeah.
you're really missing out if you haven't Shirley Jacksoned it up.
I think they did a really good job with this, aside from, as I was saying to Glenn, and he was like, all right. The sort of the real haunting was the friends we made along the way.
Yeah.
That's sort of the only place where I think they went wrong. But other than that, it is really good and really scary. Needed a little less soft acoustic guitar music cues,
ooh,
I feel like.
Yeah.
A little bit less of the coffee house pop.
Yeah, I was already sad, guys. You already had me. I was already crying. You didn't need to, like, Mumford
exactly.
me.
Exactly. Well, I know that a lot of you have seen The Haunting of Hill House. Come and let us know what you thought about it. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment. We are going to talk about what is making us happy this week, so come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Madewell, where the motto is good days start with great jeans. Madewell has options for every type of denim devotee, men's and women's styles, extended sizes, and more. And you can recycle any brand of old jeans in Madewell stores. Madewell works with Blue Jeans Go Green to turn them into housing insulation for communities in need. For every pair you bring in, you'll get $20 off a new one. So stop by a Madewell store or go to madewell.com. Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Walton Family Foundation, where opportunity takes root. More information is available at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment in this week and in every week. What is making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week?
I've been playing Red Dead Redemption 2, Rockstar Games' open world Western. I love the first game, despite not thinking that I would, because that's a Western. I'm not a Western guy. But there is something so freeing about riding out on your cayuse over yonder, let me wander till I see the mountains rise.
Uh-huh.
There's something very, very cool about that. To be fair, I'm only a couple hours in. And this game is massive, and I'm sure there was a similar learning curve on the first game that I've just forgotten about because I just loved everything else about it so much, but at this point I'm kind of trapped with a bunch of other people, and I'm not able to venture out on my own, and I keep getting these pop-up messages like, be sure to repair your guns, and keep up your stamina by eating regularly, and be sure to monitor the weight of your horse, and I'm like, monitor the weight of my what now?
That's what you were talking about.
Yeah. I know,
whole
I get
tweet
it.
Thing that I just figured out what you were talking
Look,
about.
Look, this game is gorgeous, and as soon as I can ditch these other people, I'm sure I'll dig it more, but I'd be lying to say I wasn't worried that it's going to be like, okay, everything you loved about the first game, plus tedium, you know?
Right.
So right now it's more like what's making me hopeful that I will shortly be happy.
Uh-huh.
is that okay?
Yeah, it is.
But if you want a real happy Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again is streaming now, and that version of Dancing Queen where the ships come into the harbor is
nice.
Just a click away. On this week of all weeks, you
yes.
need that joy to be one click away.
Very nice. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Barry Hardiman, my love, what is making you happy this week?
I'm going to do a theme here, which is that, again, I know I told you to go read, if you're into horror, go read Shirley Jackson. But if you're also into light, wonderful pieces of nonfiction and also some heavier pieces of fiction that are sort of interesting, you should go and get Shirley Jackson's. There's this beautiful collection called Shirley Jackson, Let Me Tell You. And it has short stories, but it also has her essays for places like Collier's and McCall's. And They are so funny, but they are also clearly funny stories about being a mom from the woman who wrote Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are these wonderful sort of moments. There's this one almost story, almost essay called The Real Me, where she talks about being, you know, tired of writing dainty little biographical things that pretend I am a trim little housewife. And it ends with, my most interesting experience was with a young woman who offended me and who subsequently fell down an elevator shaft and broke all the bones in her body except one. And I didn't know that one was there. So it is both light,
that's
but it's
dark.
Also real. It's but dark in a way that is has a kind of silliness
yeah,
to it.
Cheery. Cheery
yeah,
darkness.
It's cheery dark. It's my thing. I just love it. And there is also just, she's so wonderful and you really will burn through it. There's really something for everybody. And if it wasn't the thing for you, it will become that thing.
Awesome. Squirma Bombeck.
Yes. Yes.
All
I
right.
Love it. That's a really
thank
good
you
one.
Very
you
much.
Win.
Thank you very much, Barry Hardiman. So making me happy this week, I have been exploring the art of writing on paper, not just writing on paper, but writing on personalized stationery. Ooh. I, for the first time in my life, ordered myself some real Honest to Pete personalized stationery. And when I talked about that on Twitter, you know who I've been socializing with? The fountain pen people. The fountain pen
oh
people
gosh.
Of Twitter really? Are so much more fun mm-hmm. than you are imagining in your head right now if you've never mingled with them before. The fountain pen people will explain to you that you do not automatically have to have a fountain pen that you dip in a jug of ink and spill all over the place or blot on yourself. They make quite a number of perfectly serviceable cartridge-bearing fountain pens in the range of $15, things like that. They do give you a lovely swirl to your writing. And in fact, my dear friend and yours, Peter Sagal, recommended to me the Pilot Varsity disposable fountain pen. It's ooh. Just like any other pen that you would buy in a pack, except that it's a fountain pen. And so
Varsity.
That's
the sportiest I will ever be.
Right? Exactly. Pilot Varsity. Well, you know, he's a runner. Right.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
I do encourage you to explore the big world of writing letters, which I am trying to rediscover. I bought myself an embosser.
It's got my little personal seal.
It's so fun. So I'm going to do that. And I encourage you to mingle online with the fountain pen people. And the way that you do that is you tweet at me, you ask me a question about fountain pens, and I'll pass it along to the fountain pen people, and they will find you, and they will have so many answers. So pens writing on paper are what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon, and you can find Barry at B. Hardiman. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, our producer, Vincent Accavino, at V. Accavino, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you're tapping your foot to right now. Thanks to you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks. This was so much fun. And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have a second and you're so inclined, pop over to Apple Podcasts and give us a review. That'll help other people to find the show. We will see you all right back here next week.
Dia de los Muertos is a special time for remembering those we have lost. And Alt Latino Sonic Altar is just that, a musical celebration of the lives of those we have loved. Check it out on the next Alt Latino wherever you get your podcasts.